Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Great fortune to be here welcoming His Holiness Kavi Chandraswami Maharaj back to our temple. Let us welcome him by loudly chanting Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Maharaj is very kind, keeps coming here, gives us his valuable association. For those who are new here, I would like to introduce him. He is a very senior disciple of Srila Prabhupada. He has been taking care of devotees in Japan primarily for a period of almost 2 decades now. Originally a member of Radha Damodar Sankirtan Party, and is so much interested in book distribution that even at this elderly age, he regularly goes out on book distribution himself, even now. So he's always inspiring us with his stories about book distribution, his simplicity. Thank you so much, Maharaj, for coming here and taking out your valuable time. Thank you so much.
All right. Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 6, text number 9, and a few others because there's no purports here for quite some time. Gatva. Putrasya tat karma. Guna bihitam nripa. Deshan nisharayamasa. Satam taktva vidim rusha. So, translation. This again is Canto 9, Chapter 6, Text 9. When King Ikshvaku, thus informed by Vasishta, understood that his son Vikuksi had done, he was extremely angry. Thus he ordered Vikuksi to leave the country because Vikuksi had violated the regulative principles. So there's a lot of verses here without purport. Some more. All right. Next, having been instructed by the great and learned Brahmana Vasishta, who discoursed about the absolute truth, Maharaj Ikshvaku became renounced. By following the principles of a yogi, he certainly achieved the supreme perfection after giving up his material body. After his father's disappearance, Vikuksi returned to the country and thus became the king, ruling the planet Earth and performing various sacrifices to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vikuksi later became celebrated as Shashada. The son of Shashada was Puranjaya, who was also known as Indravaha, and sometimes as Kakusta. Please hear from me how he received different names for different activities. Formerly, there was a devastating war between the demigods and the demons. The demigods, having been defeated, accepted Puranjaya as their assistant and then conquered the demons. Therefore, this hero is known as Puranjaya, he who conquered the residents of the demons. Puranjaya agreed to kill all the demons on the condition that Indra would be his carrier. Because of pride, Indra could not accept this proposal. But later, by the order of the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, Indra did accept it and became a great bull carrier for Puranjaya. You heard about Indra's pride yesterday, right? Pride goes before the fall. You know that saying? That's from the Bible. It's very famous. It's many times in the Bible in slightly different ways. Pride is a very devastating thing. False pride. To be proud of being a Vaishnava or being in such a great family of devotees or something is different. But to be falsely proud, proud of our material position, proud of our Janma and our Aishwarya and our Shruti and our Shribir. That's very dangerous. Ruins so many people are ruined by pride. So there is another verse here. Well protected by the armor and desiring to fight, Puranjaya took up a transcendental bow and very sharp arrows. And while being highly praised by the demigods, he got up on the back of the bull, Indra, and sat on his hump. Thus he is known as Kakusta. Being empowered by Lord Vishnu, who is the Super Soul and the Supreme Person, Puranjaya sat on the great bull and is therefore known as Indravaha, carried by Indra. Surrounded by the demigods, he attacked the residents of the demons in the west. So the demons are from the west. Because everybody in India says westernization is coming in. Demonization. Previously they had some culture in them. Anyway, west is all relative, depends on where you start. Translation, the next verse. There was a fierce battle between the demons and Puranjaya. Indeed, it was so fierce that one hears about it, his hairs stand on end. All the demons bold enough to come before Puranjaya were immediately sent to the residence of Yamaraj by his arrows to save themselves from the blazing arrows of Indravaha, which resembled the flames of devastation at the end of the millennium. The demons who remained when the rest of their army was killed fled very quickly to their respective homes. After conquering the enemy, the saintly king Puranjaya gave everything, including the enemy's riches and wives, to Indra, who carries a thunderbolt. For this he is celebrated as Puranjaya. Thus Puranjaya is known by different names because of his different activities. The son of Puranjaya was known as Ashesh Anena. As Anena's son was Prithu, and Prithu's son was Vishwagandhi. Vishwagandhi's son was Chandra, and Chandra's son was Yuvanashva. The son of Yuvanashva was Shravasta, who constructed a township known as Shravastipuri. The son of Shravasta was Brihadashva, and his son was Kuvalayashva. In this way, the dynasty increased. To satisfy the sage Uttanka, the great powerful Kuvalayashva killed a demon named Dundu. He did this with the assistance of his 21,000 sons. Couple more, then there's a two-sentence purport. O Maharaj Pariksit, for this reason, Kuvalayashva is celebrated as Dundu Mara, the killing of Dundu. All but three of his sons, however, were burned to ashes by the fire emanating from Dundu's mouth. The remaining sons were Dridashva, Kapilashva, and Bhadrashva. From Dridashva came a son named Haryashva, whose son is celebrated as Nikumba. The son of Nikumba was Bahulashva. The son of Bahulashva was Krishashva. The son of Krishashva was Senajit. And the son of Senajit was Yuvanashva. Yuvanashva had no sons, and he retired from family life and went to the forest. Although Yuvanashva went into the forest with his 100 wives, all of them were very morose. The sages in the forest, however, being very kind to the king, began very carefully and attentively performing an Indra Yajna so that the king might have a son. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. One may enter the Vanaprastha order of life with his wife, but the Vanaprastha order means complete retirement from household life. Although King Yuvanashva retired from family life, he and his wives were always morose because they had no sons. The king entered the arena of sacrifice, and when he saw all the Brahmins lying down, he personally drank the sanctified water meant to be drunk by his wife. Purport. Yajnas performed by Brahmins according to Vedic ritualistic ceremonies are so potent that the sanctifying water of the by Vedic mantras can bring about a desired result. In this instance, the Brahmanas sanctified the water so that the king's wife might drink it in the yajna. But by providence, the king himself went there at night and, being thirsty, drank the water. You probably should read a little more because it's so connected, you know. When the Brahmanas got up from the bed and saw the water pot empty, they inquired who had done this work of drinking the water meant for begetting a child. When the Brahmanas came to understand that the king, inspired by the supreme controller, had drunk the water, they all exclaimed, "Alas, the power of providence is real power. No one can counteract the power of the supreme." In this way, they offered their respectful obeisances to the Lord. Therefore, in the course of time, a son with all the good symptoms of a powerful king came forth from the lower right side of King Yuvanashva's abdomen. The baby cried so much for breast milk that all the Brahmanas were unhappy. Who will take care of this baby? Then Indra, who is worshipped in that yajna, came and solaced the baby. "Don't cry," Indra said. Then Indra put his finger in the baby's mouth and says, "You can drink me." Because Yuvanashva, the father of the baby, was blessed by the Brahmanas, he did not fall victim to death. After this incident, he performed severe austerities and achieved perfection at that very spot. Mandara, the son of Yuvanashva, was a cause of fear for Ravana and other thieves and rogues who caused anxiety. O King Parikit, because they feared him, the son of Yuvanashva was known as Trasadasyu. This name was given by Indra. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the son of Yuvanashva was so powerful that when he became emperor, he ruled the entire world, consisting of seven islands, without any second ruler. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not different from the auspicious aspects of the great sacrifices, such as the ingredients of the sacrifice, the chanting of the Vedic hymns, the regulative principles, the performer, the priest, the result, the arena, the time of sacrifice. Knowing the principles of self-realization, Mandata worshiped the transcendentally situated Supreme Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, who comprises all the demigods. He also gave immense charity to the Brahmanas, and thus he performed yajna to worship the Lord. And who knows that verse from Bhagavad Gita that's kind of the same? I am the butter, I'm the fire, I'm the mantras, right? Anybody know that one? Chapter 9. Krishna says like that. Most of these things. He's the yajna, he's everything. He's the mantras, he's the fire, he's the butter, he's the, you know, the priest, everything is Krishna. Of all places, from where the sun rises on the horizon, shining brilliantly, to where the sun sets, are known as the possession of the celebrated Mandata, the son of Yuvanashva. He had three sons in the womb of Bindumati, the daughter of Shashabindu. These sons were Puru Kutsa, Ambarish, and Muchikunda, a great mystic yogi. These three brothers had 50 sisters who all accepted the great sage Sobari as their husband. Sobari Rishi was engaged in austerity deep in the water of the river Yamuna when he saw a pair of fish engaged in sexual activities. Thus he perceived the pleasure of sex life, and induced by his desire, he went to King Mandata and begged for one of the king's daughters. In response to this request, the king said, "O Brahman, any of my daughters may accept any husband according to her personal selection." Okay, purport. This is the beginning of the story of Sobari Rishi. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Mandata was the king of Mathura, and Sobari Muni was engaged in austerity while submerged deep within the Jamuna River. When the Rishi felt sexual desire, he emerged from the water and went to King Mandata to ask for one of the king's daughters to become his wife. Om again, Sobari Muni. Of course, we could read a little more and find out more about him. He's the one who cursed Garuda, that if he came to that place where Kaliya was, and he would die because he liked the fish. He was meditating underwater. So powerful, but even by seeing fish, I don't know what kind of sex life fish have, but he became agitated. And so that type of meditation, we have also, you know, Vishwamrita Muni. He was also meditating under the water. But the society girl just put her foot in the water, and when he saw that or heard the ankle bell or something, then he forgot all the effects. He became overwhelmed by lust. So we have to be very, very careful. All these dynasties, you know, it's all leading up. This is the ninth canto, so you're getting close to finally Krishna coming. You know, so that all these dynasties, they eventually lead to Krishna. That's the importance of them. Of course, we can see the superiority of the human beings in the previous ages, which modern science, I guess they don't even believe that there was anybody, but they certainly aren't going to believe that someone could have 21,000 sons. Of course, they're trying to say that a man can give birth, I guess now. But normally that never happens. The Kali Yuga is just so dominant now. There's no force really working against it except Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. A few others, you know, in some kind of different religions are trying to maintain some regulative principles. But if you really think about it and examine there, the only reason they can keep going is because of the Sankirtan movement and a massive chanting of the holy name all over the world, which is, you know, kind of an icebreaker thing. You know, they have a boat that goes through. Now, they, because of the global warming, they don't need those boats anymore in the Arctic. There's no ice, but anyway, those kind of things are there. So, and coming here, so many advertisements, you know, there's nothing. There's one or two temples you see, but they, you know, you hardly can tell what it is. But the signboards, they're definitely, the Bhagavatam is predicted properly. In the 12th canto, Kali Yuga, Prabhupada liked to quote this one because when Prabhupada came to America, it was just a hippie time, and it was just the beginning of the time when men could grow their hair out and get away with it, you know. When I was in up to junior high school, you know, we had to cut the hair every 10 days, and you know, it had to, if it touched your ear, one hair would touch your ear, then that was like really bad. Finally, by high school time, then for me that, you know, you could have long hair. Like we see those pictures of Radhanaswami. So people were shocked to see devotees when they shaved their head. That was the thing they could least comprehend, because his freedom was to have long hair. So that it says that beauty will be judged by the haircut, Kali Yuga. And so many advertisements, and now it's hair color. I don't know how many I've seen if I drive around it. Everyone says this is the longest lasting hair color, you know, and all showing dark hair. In Africa, they have hair relaxer because they have that kinky hair. So women want to have long hair. And they have skin lightener, like here also. In Europe, we have the suntan clinics. The solarium, they call it. And they have you get in a box and they close you in a box like a coffin and zzz. I saw one that said 40,000 watts. Quick suntan, you know. So they're so bodily conscious. And they know about worshiping the feet, but they're worshiping their own feet. Right? This is another ad I never saw before, Toshi. The shoes made with the highest technology. You know. Insanity, but, you know, just these stupid shoes. I guess they're Italian or something. So, you know, worship your own feet, get the really far out shoes, and then everybody will know that you're really special. Nothing about Krishna's feet. So the Bhagavatam is, you know, it has these things that might sound a little mundane, but they're all connected with Krishna. These great heroes, inconceivable, but, you know, they try to have imitations of these things in the movies and something. You know, somebody can fight against so many people at once or something. I don't know if anybody can really do that, but these people could. Arjuna was fighting, you know, against millions, right? By himself. Of course, he had Krishna there, but Krishna was just driving the chariot. But he could do that. And, you know, his armor was so good and his mantras and his arrows and, you know, technology that they had was very high. Now they can also bomb a city or something, helpless people in their house, and kill many people all at once. But nobody can really fight like that, only in the computer games. And a devotee was telling me the other day they've done research in the army, they're very favorable to these computer games because it gets people used to killing. And they did a survey, and then all the wars, and a very high percentage of the soldiers never used their gun, you know, because they just couldn't kill somebody. You know, so they're there with the gun and everything, but they just freeze up, they don't shoot. But after they play these games and they kill so many people, and, you know, it looks quite real. I saw some in Japan, they even have, like, actors. But when they shoot them, their blood comes spurting out, and, you know, they fall down, the head goes flying off. They're really advanced in game centers there. Yeah. They're so advanced that they even have a virtual girlfriend that comes on the mobile phone, and they'll take them on a date, go to expensive hotels and everything, you know, because they can't deal with real people. Kali Yuga, so many people, they can't, like, talk face-to-face with anybody, or, right? To talk on the phone to the person that's right next to you. So Subari Muni was a very powerful sage, but then here's what happened to him. He thought, I'm now feeble because of old age. So the king was actually, you know, saying, forget it, you know. He'd been underwater for a long time, and he was old. He's all wrinkled up, and, you know, it didn't look very good. So my hair is gray, my skin is black, slack, and my head always trembles, you know. But besides that, I'm a yogi, so women don't like me. Since the king has thus rejected me, I shall reform my body in such a way as to be desirable even to celestial women. What to speak of the daughters of the worldly king? So he became so lusty that he's going to use all his yogic mystic power that he saved up, you know, to get wives. Therefore, when Subarimuni became quite young and beautiful person, the messenger of the palace took him inside the residential quarters of the princesses, which were extremely opulent. All 50 princesses then accepted him as their husband, although he was only one man. And he became so beautiful. So he used up all his mystic power that he'd saved up, you know. Like Vishishta, you know, Vishwamrita Muni, three times. So the first time he became lusty for that Menaka and he got married, and then he realized, oh no. So all that he had done tapasya like no one had ever done before and no one will ever do again, and it was all lost, you know, because of lust. The next time he became angry and lost it all again, you know. You have to be careful to stick to the regulated principles, stick to your practices. Even, you know, King Bharat, who had reached bhava stage, you know, he got bewildered by the, well, it was compassion, but he was neglecting his sadhana and his spiritual practices, and he realized he was neglecting it, but he thought, well, I have to take care of this little deer. And then he had to become a deer in his next life. So let's be careful. So the princesses, being attracted by Subarimuni, gave up their sisterly relationship and quarreled among themselves, each one of them contending, this man is just suitable for me and not for you. In this way, they ensued great disagreement. You know the other story of who's that daughter of Shukracharya? Devayani and the other one? Huh? Sharmishta, yeah. So then that purport, Prabhupada said, women have been fighting with each other for no reason since time immemorial. So they started quarreling. Because Subarimuni was expert in chanting mantras perfectly, his severe austerities resulted in an opulent home with garments, ornaments, properly dressed and decorated maidservants and manservants, and varieties of parks and clear water lakes and gardens. In the gardens, fragrant with varieties of flowers, birds chirped and bees hummed, surrounded by professional singers. Subarimuni's house was amply provided with valuable beds, seats, ornaments, and arrangements. Valuable beds. I saw one shop too. It said, your dream bed. Right? You dream of a better bed. And I saw one shop in Delhi when we were on Rath Yatra. It was called the Ananda Mattress Shop. And it said, 8 hours of bliss to sleep. Because so many people can't sleep properly. There's so much anxiety, or their body's so disturbed, and a lot of us have that problem. It was, so then it had varieties of sandalwood creams, flower garlands, and palatable dishes. Surrounded by opulent paraphernalia, the Muni engaged in family affairs with his numerous wives. Purport. This one has a long purport. Subari Rishi was a great yogi. Yogic perfection makes available 8 material opulences: anima, lagima, mahima, prapti, prakamya, ishita, vashitva, and kama Vasayate. Sabari Muni exhibited excellence in material enjoyment by dint of his yogic perfection. The word Bahuricha means expert in chanting mantras. Material opulence can be achieved by ordinary material means, can also be achieved by subtle means through mantras. By chanting the mantras, Sabari Muni arranged for material opulence, but this was not the perfection of life, as will be seen. Sabari Muni became very dissatisfied with material opulence and thus left everything and re-entered the forest in the Vanaprastha order and achieved final success. Those who are not Atma Tattva, Vit, who do not know the spiritual value of life, can be satisfied with external material opulences. But those who are Atma Tattva are not inspired by material opulence. This is the instruction we can derive from the life and activities of Sabari Muni. So we can learn, we see that basically people must be interested in all these things because so much money is spent for advertising them. So they must be selling thousands of times more than what they spend on advertising. So people are madly worshiping their own feet, and buying. I read about some company making beds that cost like $5,000 or something like that, stuffed with all kinds of different things, and supposed to help you sleep better. Some people said it does sleep better. Some said it didn't make any difference. But we see the poor people, like the. When we go to the beach from a Juhu temple, all the rickshaws are parked. And they sleep in their rickshaw, you know, with their feet sticking out this far. They really sleep. They don't have any problem. You see those kind of people. I've seen them in Japan, the homeless guys. They're sleeping right on the road, you know, with all the traffic going by, and they sleep so peacefully, you know. But the rich man in the Taj, you know, paying $10,000 a night or whatever, you know, he may be waking up hundreds of times, you know, disturbed by this, worried about that, telephone ringing, you know. People are mad after sleeping even. They did a survey in Canada, I think, and they asked people if you could have a choice between a good night's sleep and sex, and more people said they'd rather have the good night's sleep. Very valuable. Sleep is important, you know. If we don't sleep properly, then we're going to be really tired and can't concentrate the mind, can't remember anything, you know, get sick. So it's very important. So in America, they have one here, one of the hospitals here. I read last time I was here, just opened the first sleep clinic in Bombay. America, you see them everywhere, sleep clinic. It's where they try to teach people to sleep without drugs and stuff, you know. Of course, many people, if the doctor tells them you have to turn off your phone at night, turn off the television, no, I can't do that, you know. So then they can't sleep because they have all their disturbances wired. So Sabari Muni, though, he had this, by so much tapasya, must have been, you know, because this long ago, so hundreds of years or more, you know, meditating underwater, you know, giving up everything, and then use all that power just to have an opulent material life, trying to take care of 50 wives, you know, who are quarreling. Of course, men will quarrel also. There's one story of two demons, they're descendants of Hiranyakasipu, forget their names, and they were twin brothers. And they did, you know, tapasya like Hiranyakasipu. They became very, very powerful. And they got the benediction from Brahma that the only way they could die is if they killed each other. They thought, that'll never happen. They would, if you ask them a question, they would both answer the same thing. You know, they ate off the same plate. They did everything together their whole life. They were very loving brothers. So they had that, they became very, very powerful, and they were terrorizing the entire universe. No one could kill them. So Lord Brahma, you know, was requested to do something about it. So he created the most beautiful woman. I think her name was Tilottama. And she, you know, she said, what should I do? He said, you go and entertain these two men. So she went, and she was dancing around in front of them, and the one said, ah, there it is, that's the girl for me, I'll marry her. And the other one said, nope, I saw her first. And they started fighting, and they killed each other. So you cannot win, you know, by making material arrangements. No matter how powerful someone can get, it has to be given by Krishna, and it can be taken away by Krishna. And our spiritual advancement also, Krishna gives it when we qualify, when we humbly and sincerely cry for Krishna. I was listening to Krishna book yesterday, Prabhupada's dictation, and he was saying how the cows in Vrindavan had achieved this perfection because they were crying for Krishna. Tears were coming. And if you can just get that, tears, crying for Krishna, you know, crying for wanting to serve Krishna, or, you know, feeling remorseful, like we read in Narottam Das or something, that I've, you know, wasted my life because I never served Radha and Krishna. And then that's perfection. Bhaktisiddhanta told the disciples, you have to learn to cry for Krishna. And someone said, what if we can't cry for Krishna? He said, then you should cry because you can't cry. You know, you should. Of course, you know, men are taught not to cry, right? And my father, oh, you know, boys don't cry, right? But then when he'd get angry with me and I didn't cry, then he would get really upset. Because I took it very seriously. I never cry, no matter what. You know, get injured in the sports or whatever, I never cry. Still, I don't. Unfortunately, that conditioning doesn't leave. So I don't cry for Krishna either. But that we have to learn, that is to just be mad after Krishna. So by association with devotees, people ask, you know, all the time, simple things. By association with devotees, the process works by following the regulated principles, by following devotional practices, beginning with chanting the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I don't know if you get this as brahmacharis, maybe. They come and ask for blessings. Say, chant Hare Krishna. No. Right? They won't chant. That's the only blessing I have. I don't, you know, what if I touch your head, what is that going to do? Except make you in more illusion that now you're blessed. If you don't chant the holy name, and it's such an easy thing for anybody, but they, no. Yesterday after Mangalartik, I went on the beach and it was deserted. But there were two drunken men. They must have been drinking all night, and they were kind of dancing around, and they were singing something, and it's like Jagai and Mada, you know. So they said Hare Krishna, and I said Hare Krishna. Then they came. They wanted to touch my feet, you know. So I kept trying to get away, and I said, chant Hare Krishna. No, chant, chant. You know, they don't want to, they wouldn't chant anymore. So it's unfortunate, but we have to keep trying and find the people who will chant, because there are many, many people who are not happy for whatever reason. Some of them have had all these material things, like Subari Muni. After a while, he got wondering, what am I doing? You know, I was so renounced, everything, and all of a sudden, here I am with 50 wives. What happened, you know? And he just left it. So some, that can happen. Others may just get frustrated because they can't get the things that that they see advertised everywhere, and then they may seek something else. for whatever reason, we want to be available, we want to be out, we want people to have a chance, you know, to get purified. That's why we make temples. Prabhupada made temples so people can come and associate with devotees. They can hear the holy name and chant the holy name, hopefully take prasadam. Like yesterday in Juhu, I don't know, something like 100,000 people come every day and on Sunday. And almost everybody takes some kind of prasadam. The restaurant, it holds 700 people, it's full, you know, people are waiting in the lobby. But outside, the samosas and kachoris, you know, they're always mob every day. So, you know, people are getting, and they have to walk through the temple to get there, you know. So they hear kirtan, they get darshan, a lot of people get books. And here also, you know, Sankirtan is going out. Now I guess marathon is coming up, and you know, so many people are getting books, but then we have to be able to pursue those people, you know, find them, help them to apply, you know, whatever they read, if they read it, you know, encourage them to read it. And this way the world is getting purified. This is Kali Yuga is getting pushed back. Kali is promoting everywhere whiskey and, you know, at least now they stopped all the cigarette advertising in Bombay. Two years ago, there were so many cigarette advertisements between here and Juhu that you couldn't get away. No matter where you look, there'd be another one. And over here, a small one. Up here, a big one. Behind. And at least they took that down. But people still smoke. They're just crazy. In Singapore, the government is worried, so they banned the advertising. And on the box, not only does it say that cigarette smoking is deadly and all the things, it has pictures, color pictures of cancer. Still, the young junior high school people are smoking like anything. You know, somebody older buys a cigarette, goes into school, and sells them at a high price, because they think it's something rebellious and whatever. I'm not afraid, I'm a tough guy, you know, I'm not worried. This Kali Yuga is so powerful. And he's working overtime, advertising all the meat eating and gambling. That was also Singapore, other places also. On the baggage claim at the airport, there's a big signboard for the casino. It's the only advertisement inside the baggage claim. It says, I can't remember what it said in it. It said, expect a reward. You know, like you're automatically going to win. But nobody wins. It's impossible to win. If you're just really gambling in the casino, it's impossible in the long run to win. And there are people who are experts and they know the game perfectly and they can beat it. So the casino doesn't let them in. They're watching with cameras everywhere, and if they see somebody winning too much, they kick them out. And in Las Vegas, and then they'll call all the other casinos and say, this guy's in town and this is how he looks today. And because these guys will put on different disguises, and so they only want people who gamble and are going to lose. It's not fair, but they're promoting it like more and more all over the world. In India, I don't know, they have casinos, but they have so many different kinds of gambling, the lotteries. Many people go completely bankrupt from lottery, even though the cheap tickets. A few people win. Those are the ones you hear about, right? Somebody wins $50 million, or, you know, once in a while. But they don't tell you about all the people that committed suicide and, you know, lost their family and lost everything. So these things are very bad, but they're being promoted like anything. Illicit sex, especially, is promoted no matter what else they're advertising. And the meat eating, you know, India, the meat eating is, India was always known as a, you know, not eating meat, but now more and more people are eating meat. And they're killing so many animals. And, you know, so intoxication is advertised everywhere, right? And, you know, as something very wonderful. I haven't seen here that, I saw one that said, if you're driving, don't drink or something. I saw one in America that said, drink, don't drive. So it's like, in other words, you know, just get drunk. They try also to, you know, advertise against that. In Africa, all the ads for beer says drink responsibly. And I don't know what that means, but then I saw one that said drink responsibly, don't drive or something. So in other words, you're supposed to drink but not get too drunk. And then, but you know, once someone drinks even a little bit, then they have no discretion about anything. And they're just going to drink more, and they think the more they drink, the more they think everything is great. I can drive much better now, and they have a lot of accidents. So we are, you know, against these things. So we do get opposition because those people are very powerful. They're making, you know, huge money from promoting Kali. But by just spreading the holy name and the Bhagavad Gita, people read these books or they chant the holy name, then they get purified. Taking prasadam, they get purified, and then, you know, they automatically not want to do these things as much. But Prabhupada said they have to get purified. They can't even understand any philosophy. Just have kirtan. One country in Europe, long ago when devotees first went, some devotees went that didn't know the local language. So they just had kirtan and prasadam, and they were getting a lot of people. Then a devotee came who knew the local language, and he gave a lecture. The next week, nobody came. So they said, what did you tell them? He said, well, I told them about the regulative principles. You know, you can't eat meat, you can't drink, can't have sex, can't. And nobody wants to come then. But if they keep chanting, then, you know, automatically they'll get purified. So we have to be careful how we present these things. But for ourselves, we have to be, you know, strict completely, because there's subtle, you know, things also. Not so hard to give up the gross things, but many people, they just really have a hard time with, you know, these ideas. How can you live? But if they chant a little bit, they get purified. Read Bhagavad Gita. Many people, just by reading Bhagavad Gita, they, you know, they give up meat eating and they change. Now there's so much, you know, pressure. Even I know devotees in Indian families whose parent mother tells them, you know, you should drink. Said, the mother asked him, what do you drink when you go to the company party? He said, well, I drink, you know, soda. I said, no, you should not be weird, you know, you should drink. They'll think there's something wrong with you and then you won't get promoted, you know. But if you do your work nicely and you don't, you know, try to tell everyone else not to drink, then usually you can get by. Right? In Japan, it wouldn't be so easy. It's not so easy. And everyone has to be the same, you know. But this is going on. So we learn from Subari Muni, and he suffered actually because he cursed Garuda. That's why all this happened to him. Because Garuda was coming and eating the snakes, and then he cursed him. So he was protecting Kaliya. And, you know, for the sake of the fish. Well, Garuda was eating fish, right? And, yeah. And he liked the fish because he lived with them. underwater. It's, you know, like people now, they like to get a big fish tank and look at the fish, right? Or they go in the water. In Bali is a big tourist place, and one of the main things they advertise is diving, you know. So you can look at, there's so many different kinds of incredible fish, colorful, weird-looking things, you know. So they advertise that we have the most different kinds of, you know, fish here, and you can go and look at them, you know. When I was in Hawaii one time, the devotees took me to the place called Hanama Bay. It's a sanctified bay there that's full of the fish, all these far-out fish. Nobody can go fishing or anything. And, you know, they thought I would like to. And I went down, I looked at a few fish, and I thought, they're looking at me and thinking, look at that stupid guy, you know, looking at us, you know. I didn't want to do it anyway, but they were saying to come, and then I just got out. I said, I can't do it. I don't want to just look at fish, you know. Now, if they would be thinking that, look at Krishna's artistic ability to create so many different varieties of fish and so many different things and so many different species of life and so many different kinds of birds and, you know, everything. So much variety, and Krishna's created all that. I mean, but if an artist draws a picture of the fish or something, it's something wonderful. Prabhupada gave the example that if a man can imitate the barking of a dog, then, you know, he can get a big audience, get on the television and get paid for sounding just like a dog or singing just like a bird, right? But nobody cares for the real thing. If a dog is barking, everyone gets angry. Get out of here. Shut that dog up, you know. Some people shoot the dog. But a human being can imitate it perfectly. They'll think it's very wonderful. So people are really bewildered. They're really misled. And we have everything, wonderful festivals like yesterday, or so many days, especially yesterday. Govardhan is always one of the nicest festivals. Everybody's really happy. If you have a chance, I saw in the Dandabats from Mayapur there, Govardhan. Jayapataka Maharaj was there in Juhu, and he told Brajhari, I've never seen such a nice arrangement for Govardhan Puja. Then I saw the pictures from Mayapur. They were even better, you know. But so many people, everybody loves to go around the Govardhan and get the prasadam, and, you know, and the Leela is so wonderful, Giriraj, you know, and we learn about Indra also, and the foolishness of, you know, pride. That's an extreme example. But Krishna just showed it. And he didn't punish Indra. He rewarded him. He purified him of his pride. Because he's a great devotee doing very, very difficult service. But, you know, because he's in such an exalted material position, he can get bewildered. Even the king of heaven. So Krishna just purified him. So that he came and offered wonderful prayers and bathed Krishna with the milk of the Sarabi cow and the water of the celestial Ganges and created there the Govinda Kund around Govardhan. So now around, you know, Govardhan, that is there. That's a good place to go to get forgiven for offenses. And can remember all these things. They're easy to remember, but and the most purifying, just to remember Krishna's Vrindavan Leelas, especially killing the demons, and get purified of all our anarthas, you know, unnecessary bad qualities, envy and pride and greed and deceit and, you know, cheating and all the propensities that all these demons had. Just by hearing how Krishna killed them, we can get purified from those if we make a little effort. And by trying to bring more people to Krishna consciousness, the more we do that, the more we get purified, the more we get connected to Krishna. Because to do that, we have to depend on Krishna. Any bookseller realizes that. You know, I know when I was going out every day, you know, I'd always saying the same thing to everybody, but some days, like, it had absolutely no effect, you know. then I would realize, well, you know, I'm just babbling here. I'm not really praying to Krishna to have mercy on these people. And then when you do that, you don't have to say anything practically. You're really depending on Krishna and really feeling like compassion for these suffering living entities and really understanding that there's nothing that's going to help them except, you know, contact with Krishna, then people are just, you know, Krishna in their heart just inspires people to come, either come to the temple or take the book or do something, you know. And some people, it's just a gata sukriti, they have no idea what they're doing, but they just come because we have a nice restaurant or something, right? They're not really coming for spiritual advancement. Some of our restaurants I know in America, it's right next to the temple. People come almost every day, but they've never been in the temple. No, I just eat the food. You know, they tell their friends, I'm not a Hare Krishna, I just like their food. You know? And then they pay for it, so they think, you know, they're not obliged that they have to listen to us preach to them. But every day they're eating prasadam. So they, you know, they're getting purified. And they're hearing kirtan, you know. So eventually they're going to become more and more interested. Wonder why this is so nice. But they're just attracted. They don't even know why. Because it's Krishna's causeless mercy in their heart. So devotees just try to think of more and more ways to make arrangements, to make the temple a very nice place where everybody's happy and everybody's cared for and everybody's, you know, feeling like there's nothing better. And then more and more people want to come. So we're faced with that right now, that so many people are coming and we all have to take responsibility to give shelter to people because there's so many new people coming. One person can't do that. We can't just sit down 10,000 people and give them, you know, personal care. Everyone has to do that and then teach everybody. Make many, many leaders and go all over the world and all over every town and village and, you know, there's 6 billion people growing fast in the world. You know, how many devotees are there? One devotee was telling me the other day there's only 3,000 serious Vaishnavs in Bombay or something. I don't know how he got his calculation, but, you know, compared to the total population, there's a very small number, right? Each devotee has to take responsibility for a few hundred thousand or something, right? So, you know, we have to give shelter and train people and inspire ourselves and others to get out and preach, not become bewildered like Subari Muni. Because when we preach and when we, you know, we might get some material opulence. Or like, if you're a brahmachari, maybe, you know, the women don't pay much attention to you. If you become a sannyasi, then all of a sudden they're all paying obeisances all the time. Wanting to serve you, right? So we have to be careful not to become bewildered. That everybody really wants Krishna, and if someone's really representing Krishna, then we get some of the opulences of Krishna. And we never forget that this is Krishna. It all belongs to Krishna. Krishna's given it, and just keep using it for Krishna, not become attached. And just whatever Krishna, if he gives us little or gives us a lot, we just use it all for Krishna. He'll be completely happy. He doesn't say you can't serve me until you have so much more to give me. He doesn't care for that. He doesn't care rich or poor or anything. Just giving whatever you have, giving, you know, out of love. Like that fruit seller gave little Krishna and her basket filled up with jewels. But she wasn't thinking to get anything from Krishna. No, you just wanted to give. And if we can come to that platform, then of course, you know, we get more and more empowered and able to really influence people. But every devotee can influence somebody, do something. Everybody's empowered. Krishna's ready to use anyone in his service. So take advantage of it. Thank you very much. I don't know if I went over time or not. Long reading. So from tomorrow you can hear more about Subari. basically everything is there. He suddenly realized, what am I doing? You know, after all that tapasya and mystic power, you know, here I am just trying to please 50 wives who, it doesn't say they stop quarreling. It's natural. People quarrel, they want, you know. Krishna was different. Krishna had 16,000 wives, but he was home with all of them all the time. And each one thought, I'm so fortunate Krishna's with me. The other ones must be, you know, suffering. But a normal man, he can only be with one at a time, so that other ones get envious. Like Maharaj Chittaketu, you know, and he started paying attention only to the wife that had the child, and then the other ones killed the child. They became so envious. But after hearing the child preach about the nature of the soul, they all lamented, and they all, when the king left for the forest, they all also renounced everything. So it turned out for the good, but in the material world, you know, there's never peace. Everything is constantly changing. No matter what you get, it's going to change. You're going to lose it. You know, we lose our youth. You can't hold on to it. No matter how much they promise anti-aging and all these, we're going to age. Yeah. Maybe not as bad, you know, if we're very careful how we live, but we're going to get old. The eyes don't work as good. The ears don't work as good, you know, and things don't. It's just bound to happen. But we're not the body, so devotee is not bothered by all that, all these changes. Krishna doesn't change. Prabhupada never felt old, even though he was old and completely broken body. He felt like a young man. So we can also be like that if we just focus on that. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Ram. So, do we have time for questions? Huh? Is that right? Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Chopati Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Sri Radha Gopinath Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari.